this up. Proverbs 31. You can turn in your Bibles, or you each have one of your little sheets. And we're going to move to the next few verses, which are 11, 12, and 13. But let's back up to 10, and I'll read those four verses for all of us. Follow along. A woman of valor who can find. She is far more precious than jewels. I'm going to stop for a moment and say, I hope that even by now, when you hear that verse, which you've heard 100 times in your life, it conjures up something new for you since last week. All right? The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. And we're going to force ourselves to stop there, and we're going to dig in, okay? Because the verse that comes after that needs a whole bunch of time all on its own for next week. It's one of my favorites. But let's move forward and look at verse 11. The heart of her husband trusts in her. Let's just look at that phrase. The heart of her husband trusts in her. Now, there are some women sitting here tonight that says, well, I can check out for the next few minutes because this probably doesn't relate to me quite as much because I'm not married. Or I've already blown that and it's kind of beyond repair. Stop. First of all, it's never beyond repair. Next, I want us to remember something really important. We are learning this on two levels. I want us to think of our husband, our Redeemer, our Creator. We are his beloved. He is our husband that we are thinking of as a wife in relation to him, that his heart can trust in us. Okay? A woman of valor has earned the trust of God. His very heart can trust in her. And also, on a very practical level, we're going to think of this in terms of our husbands, our men that we're married to, the men that we've made a life commitment to. Okay? There's a writer that I enjoy reading. I don't necessarily agree with every single thing she says, but it's okay because she says a lot of really cool stuff. Her name is Brené Brown. How many of you have ever read something Brené Brown has written? She's written some cool stuff. I've pulled a quote from one of her books years ago, and I return to it a lot because it says, our capacity for wholeheartedness is never greater than our willingness to be brokenhearted. Our capacity for wholeheartedness is never greater than our willingness to be brokenhearted. So many of us live a mediocre life, indifferent to a whole bunch of things because we are so afraid of having our hearts broken, often because it has been. So we build a shell around our heart, thinking it's safe. I have a dear friend. She's not here tonight, but she's a good friend, and she shared with me recently she hadn't experienced joy for a long, long, long time, and she assumed that she lost her capacity for it. I said, don't give up. Don't give up. Keep asking him. Keep asking him what it is that is going to unlock it, because she says, I'm moving in. I'm not going to be afraid. And she put down a lot of things that she'd been afraid of. And she called me one day. She said, he gave me a picture. Robin, he gave me a picture of what I've done. She said, she says, it came as a dream, but she said it was like more than a dream. And she said, I saw myself. And she said, I had this thing around my heart, and it was like a vault. And she said, and I let God remove it finally. And I was terrified, but I was more terrified not to. And she says, and after he removed it, I looked down and I was in a beautiful gown. She said, I've never even felt like a girl or a woman before. But she said, part of the problem was I had that vault over my heart. And she said, in all this time, I thought I had built a shell around me so that people couldn't hurt me. She said, but he revealed to me that I was afraid that I would damage them. Isn't that interesting? She said, I was so afraid that if I wasn't careful and I didn't let my, if I let my guard down, that I was going to hurt other people. Because in her mind, as she looked back, she had hurt people. She had damaged people. She had messed people up. One of her defaults. Okay? Brené Brown goes on to say that often in life, the reason that we don't show up wholeheartedly to experience everything that life has is because we are so afraid of pain. We're so afraid of pain. But if you hold back and you keep yourself protected, it's not a fortress that you build around yourself so that you can live wholly inside. It's a prison. And the irony is that the door to that prison has a lock, and you have the key because the lock is inside. Mm-hmm. I promise you. I promise you. But you know what it takes to live life wholeheartedly and to have intimacy with God, your heavenly bridegroom and your earthly bridegroom? It takes vulnerability. Because without vulnerability, you will never, ever experience intimacy. Yes, you'll be hurt, but without being vulnerable, you'll never experience life. Okay? And the heart of God trusts the woman of valor with his own heart. Imagine that. There's a verse in Psalm 332, and it says, the upright are in his confidence. Not everybody is in God's confidence. I want to be in his confidence. But it doesn't come cheaply. You have to move in and you have to work at it and you have to pursue it. It doesn't come for those who are indifferent. And it doesn't come to people who aren't willing to take this journey. Okay? It takes courage. I want you to just close your eyes for a moment. And I want you to ask yourself a question. If you're married to an earthly guy right now, I want you to ask yourself, does he trust his heart to you? Does he trust his heart to share things that are buried deep, deep within his own soul? And some of you, probably most of you, are saying, not so much. Now, there are a few reasons for that. One reason is that men are very, very, very soul modest. Women tend to be body modest. Men and women tend to be soul modest. They don't gush and share and open up like the feminine soul does. However, they long for the connection that can only be achieved by sharing their deepest, most heartfelt thoughts with their bride. But here's the next question. How have you done in the past when he ventured into that territory? Was it a safe place for him? Did he regret it? Did you belittle? Or did you treat it very, very, very carefully? Now I want to ask you another question, even if you are single and you don't have a husband right now. Do you feel like God can trust you with his secrets? There's a verse in Psalms that says, the secret of the Lord is for those who fear him. How many of you have ever even considered the idea that he has secrets to share with you? He doesn't have the same level of intimacy with everybody, you guys. He only grows closer to the souls who are humble and vulnerable and willing. How many times has God shared something with you and you kind of squander it? Do you know what I mean? It's something really precious and sacred and important, and you just kind of either ignore it or you toss it out there and you try to discuss it with people. And by the time you walk away, you think, you know what? That was just not even as sacred as I thought it was when I started. Have you ever heard that phrase, to not cast your pearls before swine? We talked about pearls last week. Have you ever experienced that? You share something and it's so precious, and by the time it comes out of your mouth and the people in the room who aren't really worthy to hear what you're sharing get done with it, you just regret even sharing it, and it just kind of evaporates. There are things that God wants to share with you that are just for you. They're not for you to show off about. They're not for you to use to impress people that God told me this. Just let him tell you. Let what he tells you change you and become the person that people can see, and they see that light. They see that flame. Okay? Sometimes we don't hear him speak to us because we're too busy, or we assume we're not worthy for him to talk to us. You know, there's another way that we take what he says, and we kind of take his name in vain. You know how one of the Ten Commandments is not to take God's name in vain. I grew up in a Baptist household, and I was told good girls don't cuss. They don't use God's name in vain, and that's true, but that's not really what that means. You know what that really means? That really means that if I claim to bear his name, if I claim that I am in a betrothed, committed relationship with him, that I represent him well, that I don't betray him, I don't misrepresent him, and I don't make him look like a fool to the world around me. How many of you have ever heard women belittling their husbands behind their backs, or even in the room, using sarcasm and talking how men are stupid? Really, that's pretty common these days. And what does it do? It just kind of makes me sick. It just kind of makes me sick to hear it. I confess there have been times I've even slipped into it for a laugh. And I go home and I just want to bury myself in a hole. But God has entrusted things to us too. And it's very, very possible for us to misrepresent him. So when we claim to love him and to know him and to represent him, but we continually violate his word and break his commandments one after another, that's how we take his name in vain. That's how we take his name in vain. It's a different way to look at it, isn't it? You know, in a healthy marriage, infidelity is the farthest thing from either spouse's mind. Grant and I have a really good marriage. I'm grateful for it. I don't take it for granted. And neither of us sit around and worry about the other person stepping out or flirting with someone or God forbid, violating our... It's not in our minds, because that's not how a healthy marriage thinks. We want God to know he is safe to entrust his secrets to us, and we are a faithful bride. Okay? There's a author, his name is John, I think it's Diffendorfer, I don't know how to say his name. And he wrote a really neat little book called The Marriage Commandments. I highly recommend it. Deidre, you've went through it with us, and Bethany, really, really recommend it. Not a long book. We'll probably get some other groups going, but even if you're not part of a little group to discuss it with a group of two, all right? Get it for you and your husband.
What's the name again?
It's called The Marriage Commandments, okay? And this is what John says. He says, by joining in a covenant with humanity, God opened himself to the risk of having his reputation harmed. God knew that by entering into this covenant, he would be known as Israel's God. His honor would be tied to the reputation of his bride. Think about it. His reputation is tied to the way we live our life. And if we violate that over and over, ladies, he is no longer going to entrust us with the secrets of his heart. All right? throughout history, I think God's name, his reputation, his character has been so maligned that most of the people in the world now who say, I don't believe in God, it's an idea of God that has been so distorted and misrepresented that I don't believe in that God either. I think that, Isaiah 66:2 says that he confides in people whose souls are humble. Whose souls are humble, he will confide in those. It's in Isaiah 66:2. That is how we enter into intimacy with God. There's an alignment. We align our lives with how he's told us to live it. We become humble. We let ourselves be vulnerable. And then we start to build that secret world. We enter that tent. Is it starting to come into focus a little bit? Okay. There's another significant way that a husband of a faithful bride trusts his heart to her, and it's described in a passage in the Song of Solomon. It's a sweet passage. It's Song of Solomon chapter 2, like between verses 14 and 16. You can turn there if you want. It describes a scene where a bridegroom is walking with his bride through their vineyard that they share together. Now, this vineyard represents the life that they've built together, okay? It represents the things that they've planted, they've nurtured, and they've built up. And now it's bringing them blessing. It's the life. It's the house they've built together. Well, he's getting ready to go on a journey. And so he's talking to his bride, and he says to her, "Catch the little foxes for us. The little foxes that ruin the vineyard." Have you ever heard that, ladies? He says, catch those little foxes that come, usually when it's dark, and they dig around at the roots of the vineyard, and it's really, really tricky to catch them. But I know that because you are a bride, and you have a feminine soul, that you are specially equipped to catch those things that can secretly, quietly, and without notice begin to dig at the roots of our life and bring destruction. There's something about us women that knows how to catch it while it's still nibbling at the roots before the vine is completely dead and gone. Whether we're talking about our vineyard that we have built with our earthly husband or the one that we're building with God. What are some of those little foxes? They're different for all of us. It might be other individuals. You don't let other people come into the circle of intimacy you share with your husband, either this one or that one. Okay? It might be distractions that you allow into your own life, distractions that he lets into his own life. God has called us brides to guard the root system of the life that we've built, of the vineyard. Very, very cool. So there's more that we could say about that, but I'm going to move on to the next phrase. And it says, this husband, he also will have no lack of gain. He'll have no lack of gain. I want you to think of your husband, if you're married. Think about your relationship with God. Because of the behavior of this woman of valor, her husband is successful. Now, I know that we've heard voices say, well, don't be worried about his success. You need to be worried about your own success. But here's the thing that most people don't understand. His success is your success. Right, Valerie? His success is your success. And when you are willing to be in this kind of a relationship with your husband, everything that he brings into your life, all of the sparks of potential, you are willing to say, that one's good, that one's good, I'll take that one. I am going to take it upon myself to guard, to surround, to circle, to build up, and to bring to potential. That is what a godly marriage looks like.
And that's what the world longs to see. It's very rare. It's very rare. One of the things that we do when we have a Jewish wedding, if you've never seen it, it's a beautiful ceremony. And traditionally, the bride will come down the aisle and she'll encircle the man seven times. Now, if you have feminists in the audience, they're going, see there? She's like thinking that her whole life revolves around him now. She has no life of her own. Well, they're missing it. They're missing it. The reason that she's encircling him is she's picturing the fact that from now on, no matter what he looks at in the world, he looks at it through how it will affect his bride. And she's also picturing that no matter what he does, she's got it. And she's going to notice the little foxes because she has a vantage point that he doesn't see. She sees some of the blind spots that he can't see in his life. So she's wisely, humbly, kindly, carefully going to bring those to his attention so that they can do this instead of this. Make sense? Mm-hmm. Now, the way this is applied looks different for all of us. But I'm telling you, these principles are sound. They really are. One of the things that I shared with Grant recently, he said, you're different since you've started really paying attention to this text. It's been years, but he says, I've seen you change. And he said, I'm not sure I can put my finger on how, but he said, you're more at peace. And I said, I think I can explain it. I said, I know that since I've begun to become familiar and try to internalize, ladies, internalize these sacred principles from this text, what has happened is that I've come to know that I have a husband, a heavenly, invisible husband, who is always on task. He never sleeps. He's guarding, as we'll see later in weeks to come. He sits with the elders in the land at the city gates. He's in a place of protection, and he's in a place where he has the authority to make the changes necessary to protect me. And he's bringing every resource that I need for my life into my realm so that I can access it. So when I approach a situation, or I approach an opportunity, or I approach a thing that I have to do in life, he's given me the resources. Or it's not something that I need to do, because he gives me every resource I need to do what I need to do. And it isn't with an attitude of, or this is too much. I lived so much of my life. This is too much. It's too much. I can't do this. Do you know how many times I said that? I can't do this. Grant would say, what do you mean? I just can't do this. It's too much. It's too much. I quit. You quit what? I just quit. I can't do this. Because that's how I felt. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one in this room who's ever felt they can't do it. It's too much. Whatever it is. And if you haven't had it yet, you will have it. Okay? But I came to realize that, hold on, I'm accusing him of not being a provider. I'm accusing him of saying, you're not taking care of us. You're not taking care of what we have here. You're not taking care of this bride. You're asking me to do this, but I don't have the resources. It's like saying, honey, you want me to go grocery shopping, but I only have $2 here. He gives us everything we need to do what he expects us to do, ladies. And I have been accusing him for so long of not providing enough for me emotionally, monetarily, talent-wise. I'm not enough. I can't do that. It's too much. Giving me kids that stretch me to the limit. I can't do this. I cannot give them what they need. God, you goofed on this one. Okay? Don't accuse them.
sounds like you're talking a lot about faith versus trust also.
Yeah.
But we have faith. That
what's the difference?
We have faith. He's there. Everything's cool. But to actually trust him that he has given you all the resources, that he has given you the talent, that he's not asking you to do, that is where the rubber hits the road.
It is.
And that is trust. And that is so what I've been learning the last 2 years.
And then you have peace.
Because he is in control. I mean, he is in control. And the way that it goes is the way that he wants it to go. And Robin, by, you know, just following the commandments and trying to live those out as much as possible, I know I'm doing my part. I know what he's given me, but sometimes it makes no sense whatsoever. But I have to trust. It's more than just, oh, he's up there. I have to trust what I've claimed for the last 30 years, and that is totally different.
You know how I said a few minutes ago that, thank you, Valerie, absolutely. And I have to renew that commitment like several times a day, because he's called us to this journey of faith, and it's like walking through a desert at night. You've heard this. Some of you have heard this. This is how it is sometimes in our relationship with our Heavenly Father. He wants us to trust him and know that he's got it, but he requires us to walk through this life that is like walking through a desert at night, and every once in a while, he gives a flash of lightning. And when he gives that flash of lightning, you've all experienced this, everything makes sense. You see it. You feel it. You know it. It all makes sense, Lord. Oh, how could I have ever doubted you? And you see the next place you need to go, and you know how to get there, and you're ready for the journey. Well, guess what? Then the flash of lightning goes out. And you have to keep walking, but based on what you saw during the flash. I used to think I was the only person who felt that way until I heard and read that described over and over and over by very wise people. And I went, it's not just me. Because honestly, then what you have to do is continue on your journey in the direction that you know you need to go based on what you saw during that flash, because faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. But he's not cruel. He gives us what we need when we need it. So if you're thinking, I need more information. I need more inspiration. I need more certainty. He gives us what we need when we need it. And it's not unusual for me to say, I'm ready for a flash. I need a flash. And he gives it. He does. He gives it. Sometimes it feels like the 11th hour. No, it always feels like the 11th hour. Because he's trying to grow us to trust him. He's trying to grow us to trust him. Think of a household. Think of a marriage, whether it's a literal one that you know or one that you have to make up because you don't know anyone that lives like this. But there's joy. There's beauty. There's peace in the marriage. Voices aren't raised. It's almost like an invisible supply of whatever is necessary to bring all the resources to build a home filled with beauty and the ability to bless people and nurture people. And it's all there because the husband is providing it and the wife is making it come alive. And you walk into that and you experience that beauty and you think, wow. And you don't see the moving parts because it's like a dance. A great marriage is like a dance. When people say, so what about this whole submission thing? Okay, so ultimately the man has to have the final say. Doesn't that really irritate you? And I said, you know what? If you watch a couple who have learned to dance together, the fact that he is leading is not obvious. But when you first take dance lessons,
which I've begged Grant to do, and he just won't do. I'm going to work on that. It's awkward because you're just learning the steps. And the woman is trying to guide, and the man, if he's a good dancer, says, just follow me. Follow my lead. I'm going to take us to the next step. And a couple who's married for years and years and years and years and doesn't give up when the music's hard to hear. Because sometimes the music is hard to hear. But they perfect that dance, and you look at them and you say, wow, there's nobody leading. Oh, but there is. But she's trusting him to lead. She's not fighting him. She's not pulling the opposite direction, saying, I know a new step and it's a better way. Because what that does is it causes both of you to trip, and it causes people to look and say, oh, that was not a smooth dance step. Does that make sense? Speaking of dancing, I had this picture that I held up to you last week. I'm going to pass this around later for a certain reason, but this picture has that beautiful bridal gown. So it represents the bride. And it also has a sword, because we talked last week about how the woman of valor is a warrior. Warrior, okay? It's a war word. But over here, there's also a beautiful bundle of flowers. I have another friend that's going through a really, really rough time right now. And as I was praying for her, the thing that kept coming into my mind is she can't hear music. She can't hear music at all. Spiritually speaking, she just can never hear a beautiful melody playing because for her, life is a war. How many of you have seen the movie 1917? It's the movie of World War I. Have you seen it? Mm-hmm. It's an incredible film. Grant and I went and saw it right before he took off. It's a hard film to watch. Have you seen it yet? Mm-mm. It's a tough film to watch, but it's really well done. And all of the entire movie is shot with one camera scene. It follows the character from the beginning till the end, and it never, changes frames. It's hard to describe. But it follows the life of this young man on a really important mission. It's a true story during World War I, and it follows him through these horrible trenches and stepping over dead bodies and dodging bullets and having to do horrific things. And he's a warrior, and he, spoiler alert, he gets to his goal. But the whole movie is just exhausting. And by the end of it, I looked at Grant and I go, I am exhausted. I mean, it was intriguing and really well done, but it was exhausting. And my sweet friend lately has just been so discouraged with life. And I was praying for her, and I thought, she lives life like that movie. I have lived life like that movie. Here we go. Life is a slog through the trenches. I've got little kids, and they're hungry, and there's not enough money at the end of it. You know, there's... And I have slogged through the trenches, kind of slinging my sword, trying to fight my way through, quoting Bible verses to myself. But there's a balance to living. Yeah, we're warriors, but we have to hear the music. Because there's a dance. There's a dance happening. And yeah, we have a sword, but we also have to hear the music. When they went up to Jerusalem to enter God's presence in the temple, the closer they got, the louder what became? The music. There were musicians. There was singing. There has to be a song that draws us into his presence. There has to be a dance. There has to be beauty in our life. Now, I know people that live life like everything is a rosy garden path. And, oh, praise the Lord, and I'm great, and yeah, yeah. And you think, ooh, I don't even want to spend time with you. That's this end of the spectrum. People who just kind of live in this ethereal, unrealistic, ridiculous state where they're not aware of the real battles, and they're not really fighting them. And I know people like that. And then I know people like my sweet friend who's just slogging through the trenches with her sword. We need both.
we need to be able to realize that we're a warrior and life is a war zone, but I'm going to do it according to a beautiful, beautiful song. He's the singer and we're the song. There has to be beauty in life, ladies. And all of us lean toward one or the other. Are you unrealistic and just not facing it down and just going, oh, you know, it's good, it's good, it's all good, and I'm just going to read my Bible, and I'm just going to pray, and I'm going to say the right words, and I'm just going to keep my smile, and I'm just going to keep things going, and I'm not going to become too honest with my husband because that would be dangerous, and you just, you know, or it's like you're so serious and you're so intense and you're so miserable all the time that nobody can stand to be with you. So we vacillate. We vacillate. Where's beauty? It's balance. There are times for us to take up our sword, and there are times for us to realize there's a beautiful, beautiful dance to be danced in this life. I hope that makes sense. It's kind of elusive to talk about.
You know, Robin, music has a beat. And sometimes if you can align even just an everyday task to that beat,
yes,
what can you sail through life?
And you're good at that, Priscilla, because that's what God wants us to do. He wants to elevate the mundane tasks of life, and all of life can become sacred.
You know, I'm not a quick texter at all. I'm still the one finger, but I can't do this business. But the other day there was a song, and I was texting, and I found myself in the back of my head going, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. I mean, I was texting.
Because you just hear the music.
And it just went right. It was beautiful. I didn't make any mistakes.
God's entrusted us with power as women. But I want to take a glance at something, the way it looks when women misuse the power that they've been entrusted with. Who wants to look up a passage for me? It's in Isaiah. It's chapter 3. It starts in verse 16. Can someone grab that? And while that's getting found, Proverbs describes the woman of valor as a crown to her husband. But it also says in the same phrase, but she who shames him is like rottenness to his bones. A woman of valor is a crown to her husband, but she who shames him is like rottenness to his bones. You feel sad because you're married to a man who doesn't talk to you. He needs to know he can trust you. And you might have to rebuild that. Might take some time. Okay? Don't ever, ever betray him with your heart. Don't ever betray him with your words. Don't ever make him sorry that he has entrusted his heart to you. Who found that passage?
Moreover, Adonai says, because my intellect is so proud, walking with their heads in the air, and throwing seductive glances, moving with mincing steps, and jingling their anklets, and I will strike the crown of the heads as my intellect with sores. Mine has an interesting twist on that last part. You want me to say it? And Adonai will expose their private parts.
They'll be exposed. They'll be shamed. And the things that were meant to be sacred, and the discretion is stripped away, and their beauty becomes ugly. And that's a really clear, sobering portrait of women who misuse their power. And later on in that passage, it's fascinating because it talks about how the men can no longer win wars because they
were the guardians.
And they allowed their beauty to become something that they squandered, and they would walk with proud look. Isn't that what it said? A proud look. You picture their nose in the air and mincing steps, and I mean, think of what we see on TV. Think of what we see around us. Think of what we see. Think of what women have done. Think of women who don't get it. And then think of our culture, because it's no longer guarded, protected, and nurtured. And so the men
It's a downward. It's all supposed to work together.
So you might want to go home and revisit that passage and read it more carefully. It's really fascinating. It's Isaiah 3:16-26. There's so many oysters that we don't have time to bring up. But one of the things that Miriam Cosman, who wrote Circle, Arrow, Spiral, says, she says, how does one crown the divine husband God as king? Because I just mentioned the verse that says a woman of valor will be a crown to her husband. Okay, so I kind of get it in an earthly way, but how in the world do we crown God as king? Here it is. This is so brilliant. She says, the idea of bringing the spiritual down into the trenches of our everyday life is referred to in the sources as an act of malchut, or kingship. This is because bringing the spiritual into the physical world is, in essence, about crowning God as king down here. God already rules the heavens. The only way he can rule the nooks and crannies of our homes and our souls is if everything, listen, the way we do business, the way we eat, the way we conduct ourselves in a marriage, the way we treat our pets, the way we talk to our spouse, the way we talk to our children and neighbors, our employees, if those reflect our godly soul, we are bringing his kingship here. We're crowning him. Crowning God king is not a one-time affair, nor is it a lofty spiritual experience. This is very, very down to earth. We crown him when we let him into a place where he can't enter unless we open the door. Do I need to read that again? We crown him when we let him into a place where he can't enter unless we open the door, because he is knocking. That verse isn't about a person who doesn't believe in God. That verse about standing at the door and knocking is a verse addressed to his people, to his church. But he doesn't come in where we don't open the door. In our faith, every tiny action is part of a greater picture, a mosaic of self, and a way to bring heaven right down into the trenches. Isn't that powerful? Trust runs both ways. In a relationship, you have to give it and you have to receive it. There's giving, there's receiving trust. Without trust, there's not a connection. Giving, receiving. Okay? So if someone, like your Heavenly Father, says, I trust you with this, you have to take his word for it. Okay? As much as I would like to linger, we're going to move on. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. So hopefully this is starting to get a picture of who she is starting to look a little more clear. And as we move forward to this phrase, it's helpful to understand that the word good is the word Gamal. The word Gamal means camel. I know, doesn't make sense at first, does it? So listen to this. She does him Gamal, or camel, and not evil all the days of her life. When I first read this, I thought, what? And then I started thinking about it, and I looked up camel. I Googled it. And I started to learn really cool things about a camel, because a camel has this ability to endure a long journey. It doesn't give up when the going gets tough and when the desert is dry. A camel is able to bear a heavy load. A camel is able to provide the transport for crossing an otherwise uninhabitable wilderness. Are you the camel for your family? Are you the camel for your marriage? Are you able to reabsorb a little bit of water to make it go a long way? Are you able to take every drop and make the most of it
to nourish and nurture what you need in your marriage and in your home and in your life. That's what a camel does. At first, it sounds like we're being compared to a pack animal, and that doesn't sound like a great thing. But the more I thought about it, a camel is truly good. And our woman of valor does her husband, gamal. She can go the distance. So remember last week when I mentioned how a matriarch or a woman in the scripture has been assigned to every one of these phrases? Does anyone want to take a guess who this one might be? Think of camel.
Rebecca.
Yes, it's Rebecca. So in Genesis chapter 24, you can jot that down. She was simply going about her business, wasn't she? Doing good, doing what she did so well, filling her water pitchers, when along comes Eliezer, right? So she responded to him. She noticed him, and she responded to him in kindness. She stopped filling her jug for her purpose. She set it aside, and she said, "Let me fill your water jars. Let me serve you. Let me take the vessel and fill it up for you. Let me be your camel." Isn't that interesting? And guess what they were? They were camels. He had camels. So she cameled him. She was gamal. What an indicator of her true character. I have a friend whose son has married the wrong girl a few times over. And she said, "Robin," she lives in the South, "there just aren't many Rebeccas out there. We need more Rebeccas." And at first I thought, "Jan, what are you talking about?" And then I thought, you know what? There aren't many Rebeccas out there anymore. Not only did she offer water to him, but she started watering his camels, and she went back. She probably had to make so many trips back and forth to get enough water. And she made sure that it was done. She was so willing to respond to that need. She was so generous with her time and her energy. And then what happened as a result of that? She was led away to meet her bridegroom, Isaac. And they, together, built a life. She was cherished. Isaac was loved and comforted. And we're still being blessed by their story. Isn't that an amazing thing? All because she watered the camels. She gamaled him, and she gamaled Isaac for her whole life, and then we can read about that and learn from that. So what we do in our day and age is we tend to think we want to be happy, so we're going to seek love so we can be happy. Mm-hmm. Personal happiness and gratification are often the motives for seeking love. Whether it's romance or friendship or any kind of love, or even a love relationship with God. I'll seek that love relationship because I want to be happy. But what we don't know, but what is important to understand, is that happiness is the outcome of loving. It's the fruit of it. It isn't the motivation for it. When you choose to love, you will get happiness as a result. And it doesn't sound like a very profound difference, but the idea is very, very profoundly different. Because what we tend to do is think, "I'll do him good," whether it's him or him. "I'll do him good when I feel like it, or when it ultimately benefits me, or until something better comes along." How many people have an exit strategy for their relationships? But the woman of valor, she does him good and never harm all the days of her life. Sometimes, going back to what we talked about already, the reason that it's hard for us to love effectively and love passionately and love strongly and love humbly and be all in is because it's scary. It's really scary. But there's an excerpt from a book called The Four Loves, written by C.S. Lewis, that I want to read. It says this: "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, your heart, you must give your heart to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it careful round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it safe in the coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless place, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The only place outside heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers of love is hell." We live in a world where self-protection has sabotaged everybody's happiness. We're so afraid to be vulnerable. We're so afraid to be humble. We're so afraid to be all in. We're so afraid of having our heart hurt. We're so afraid of being betrayed. We're so afraid of not having enough that we hold back and we sabotage the life that God has for us. Do you understand that? But a woman of valor does not fear. She does him good. She's all in all the days of her life till the very end because she's Gamal. Isn't that powerful? Such a little thing that you could miss, but it means everything. In Titus 2, women are encouraged to love their husbands and their children and to teach younger women to love husbands and children. Very important that the pronoun there is not there. Older women are commanded and encouraged to teach younger women, and I am kind of becoming one of those older women now. I realize that. And so younger ladies, or older ladies, let's band together and really encourage the younger women. It's time to love the very idea of husbands. The very idea of children. Because we're being told not to. Men are, they're idiots, after all. You don't need them. As a matter of fact, it's perfectly acceptable to have a household, have two mommies, just adopt a baby, have a sperm donor, because that way you don't have to put up with an idiot leaving his socks on the floor and scratching in places you don't want to watch him scratch. Am I wrong? We live in an environment where if you're in the workplace, Bethany, tell me if I'm wrong, it's not unusual for people to giggle and kind of poke fun at men in general, their husbands in particular. Have you experienced that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And loving the idea of children? Are you kidding? Aren't they just a terrible interruption? Aren't they a terrible inconvenience and an expense? You can get rid of it. Or, I know I'm treading on dangerous ground here, but you can have it and dress it up cute and trot it out for the world to see when you feel like it. But when you want to do what you want, just hire someone to raise it for you. Sorry. But I need to encourage you to love the idea of husbands and love the idea of children. Because that's what godly femininity does. It builds a life. A wise woman builds her house. A foolish one tears it down with her own hands. Proverbs 14:1. Are you building up? Are you tearing down? You say, well, my kids are raised. What are you doing with your words? Are you encouraging the people around you to love husbands and children? Are you living a life that displays the beauty and the importance of that? Or do you believe the lie that that's low and you're being diminished if you fall into that narrow way of thinking? But our tent from the outside looks small, but from the inside, it's very, very large. I'm going to force myself. Well, before I go to the next phrase, there's something that I need to mention because this is very, very important. When I talk about vulnerability and being all in an earthly marriage, that does not mean that you enable a dangerous fool. You do not enable a dangerous fool. Because there are times that women aren't at the top of their game when they make a commitment in marriage and they wake up and realize, whoops. And then they realize that this man isn't going to husband her. In fact, he's not even a man, he's a boy. It takes two adults to be in a marriage. You can't be married to a child. All right? And sometimes these boys don't understand how important it is to cherish and protect a woman, and they violate your trust and they can abuse you. Love does not permit that. The woman of valor does not permit that. Vulnerability isn't self-hate. It is not suffering with a childish fool. Okay? Vulnerability is making space within myself for another to truly love me. But if they're not capable to truly love you, God has given you a way to be free. And don't ever, ever allow yourself to be made to feel unworthy because you've had to make that choice. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Divorce happens. Marriages break. Yeah, God hates divorce. He hates a lot of things, but we live in a broken world. And so sometimes women can be victims, and God has given divorce as a way to bring freedom from a relationship that can destroy you. Okay? So you only you know the difference, but you have to understand the truth. Requires faith to do good and not evil to your husband all the days of your life. So we come to our last phrase for the evening, regretfully, because I skipped a whole bunch of stuff, but it's okay. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. Where do we see wool and flax mentioned in the Torah? Where do we see that?
Don't mix them.
Yeah. And that whole commandment can seem really irrational, and that's a whole other discussion, but God says keep these separate. So among other things, the woman of valor is able to divide what needs to be separated. She separates the sacred from the profane. She keeps what needs to be here, there, and over there, there, and she doesn't just mingle everything together. She knows how to make decisions, and she uses discernment to separate things according to truth. Does that make sense? One of the things that God gives us permission to mix wool and flax is when the tzitzit is made, and then there's a thread of blue. So it's always been kind of mysterious why God gives instructions for the high priest, the royal high priest, to make his tzitzit mixing those fibers and then have a strand of blue in them. I believe that God commanded his people to violate his own rule and to make an exception to invite them into a place of royalty. We are exceptional, and there's a place where we walk on a different, on a higher road, because we're called to live like royalty, like we talked about last week. Okay?
Excuse me, Robin. So are you saying that the tzitzit is made of two different fibers?
Mm-hmm. It's mixed. It's mixed fibers. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that in Leviticus?
I'm trying to think of, give me just a moment here to decide what I want to take the time to share before we close this evening. Okay, there's what we're going to close with. This phrase that talks about how she works with willing hands and mentioning the tzitzit. Basically, men wear tzitzit, don't they? And I've had women, including little Eliana, she goes, can we wear parashahs too? There's no rule against it. But traditionally, women don't need to because they're not as forgetful about God's ways. we tend to remember because we're more spiritually sensitive. We're also more emotional. So God brings maleness into the world and masculinity to bring that balance and that beauty. But when it comes to women wearing tzitzit, it occurred to me one day, we do wear them every day if we notice. Because here's what the word says. There's a verse in Proverbs 7:3. Jot it down. And he says, bind the commandments to your fingers. How many fingers do we have? How many hands do we have? How many tablets were there when God gave his commandments? There was a left and a right. One of the tablets talked about how to carry out connection with people. She is not, that baby's not bothering us. Don't worry about it. You just relax. One of the tablets held the five commandments about how to interact and connect with people effectively and love people well. And the other five talks about this relationship here, the vertical one, how to connect with God and love him well. There's a separation, a distinction, but it's a left and a right, and you need both. You need both. I thought, wow, I have two hands. I have 10 fingers. And if I bind them to my fingers, as the woman of valor, working with willing hands and allowing the work of my hands to be an extension of his commandments, I had tzitzit that hang up my sides all the time. We can be reminded of his commandments every time we look at our hands, every time we reach out and use our hands to affect the world around us. We have tzitzit. Isn't that cool? They even kind of look a little fringy. Mine are kind of thick, so they're not that fringy. But if you have long, thin ones, fingers, they're more so. Does that make sense? Just kind of a really, really cool way to think about that verse. At least I think so. I'm going to end with another quote. I quote people a lot because when I read people, smart people, I realize I'll just quote what they said because they're way smarter than me and they said it better than I could ever say it. There's a book called The Kabbalah of Forgiveness, and it talks about God's loving kindness and how that is what describes his essence. Yes, he gets angry. Yes, he has to exercise justice. But mercy and loving kindness is what he is all about. And it talks about how we need to reflect him in the way we treat others around us with that same loving kindness. And it says this: a delicate oil painting may be ripped from its frame and sewn into a very serviceable sack to carry potatoes. But that would constitute an offense to the great beauty of the image painstakingly painted onto the canvas. The same is true for human beings. Infused with the image of God, we maximize our identity when we bring our conduct into conformity with our divine potential. Isn't that beautiful? You say, huh? You can take a beautiful oil painting and rip it from its frame and throw it into a sack and take it from one place to another. And yeah, you still have the oil painting and it still has the same workmanship, but that's not how it's meant to be displayed. The same is true for humans. Infused with the image of God, we maximize our identity when we bring our conduct into conformity with our divine potential. Women of valor are beautiful women because we are learning how to bring our conduct into conformity with the divine potential. Isn't that amazing, ladies? That's what Yeshua did. He came to live a life and show us what that looks like. Comments, questions? Yeah.
For any reason?
Oh, gosh, no.
Well, but the woman's harmed?
That is a decision that only a woman can make between her and God and very, very wise counselors. But I just think it's so important to release women from shame when they find themselves in a situation where staying in a marriage doesn't bring glory to God and it doesn't reflect Him on any level. Both partners are better off without that entanglement at times. You know, it takes two to make a covenant of marriage, but I believe that it only takes one to break it. Okay? And you might disagree, but that's okay. Not every single marriage should be maintained. Most should. Most should. And if you're looking for an exit to make your life more convenient, or Jesus said, if you divorce your husband in order to marry another, you commit adultery. That's what that passage means. It's been mistranslated, and a lot of people think that he taught that if you divorce and you get remarried, that you're committing adultery. But the translation infers that if you divorce in order to marry another, you are doing something so wrong. And let's face it, that's the reason most people get divorced in our life. They find another game. And that's what was going on when that was written. People were wife swapping and finding excuses to divorce their wife so that they could be with someone different. And it was a selfish, ugly thing. They weren't husbanding their women. Okay? So. All right. So, ladies, it is exactly, well, I was going to say exactly 7:30. I'm 7:34-ish. If you need to slip out, I understand, because I have been committed to staying true to the time frame. But if you want to stay for just a few more minutes, I'm going to play a song. It's 5 minutes long. I truly won't be offended if you slip out. Truly, truly, I won't. But if you want to stay, and if I'm successful with pushing the right button here, this is an old song. It's been around for like a decade, but I just discovered it recently. I probably had heard it before, but I was just brought to tears just 2 weeks ago when I listened to this song, and I said, this is my song right now. And it's called This Journey Is Our Own. It's sung by Sarah Groves. And the reason I'm playing it tonight is because I've been emphasizing how this journey that each of us choose to take, if we choose to take it, is a very, very personal one that no one can take for us. And we can't take for anyone else. And that's what this song is about. And I think it's beautiful. So let me do my best to play it and share it with you.
Pay the highest price. I feel it right now. This journey is my own. Cause trying to please the world, it was breaking me down. It was breaking me down.
Song earlier today, I was thinking about this passage in Jeremiah 31. It says that when the Lord gathers his bride, their life will be like a well-watered garden, and they will never languish again. The virgin will rejoice in the dance, the young men and the old men together. I will turn their mourning into joy, and will comfort them and give them joy for their sorrow. Isn't that beautiful? And that's what he does. He turns mourning into dancing. And so if your life feels like a slog through the trenches, ask him to help you to hear the music. Okay? Thank you.